it has been our custom for many years now, after someone has been on a significant retreat, to provide an opportunity in the meeting after the retreat for folks to think out loud about their retreat experience. I was a psychotherapist for many, many years, and I know that having a chance to talk about your experience really helps to integrate it, kind of connect the dots, and also to make that information more accessible and workable going forward in your life. The other benefit, I think, from this exercise is it is informative and inspiring for folks who were not on the retreat. What I would like to do is start with, there are four of us here in the room who were on the retreat, and then we'll go to the one, two folks who were on the retreat who are with us via Zoom. So let me start. There were 18 of us in a retreat at Deer Haven, and it was nice to be back there again. The routine was to wake up at 6:45. Yeah, I always get up earlier and meditate before the wake up alarm goes off, and have the first sitting at 7:15, and alternate sitting and walking meditation with breaks for breakfast, lunch, and dinner through the day, and then the last 30 minutes before lunch was a chance for people to ask questions, share their experience very mindfully, and I would provide some clarification and encouragement when I could. And then I would provide guided meditations for the first two or three days, an alternate occasionally during the entire retreat. And then there would be a Dharma talk at night at 7:30, I think. And then I would have individual interviews that started the third day of the retreat. And everyone had a chance for two individual interviews. My retreat experience was great. I've been saying to people afterwards that getting ready for the retreat, organizing, getting the paperwork ready, setting things up. I've done it so many times, it's kind of tedious. But when the retreat starts, I kind of fall into the groove because I sit probably more than most people do on the retreats. Because that's what I do. I do a lot of meditating on retreats. And so a lot of what I was sharing with people is a combination of what I've read and previous talks that I've given, and my own retreat experience is inspiring for me. It followed a particular trajectory, one issue after another through the evenings, and I recorded them, and I had notes for all the TED talks, and I actually was able to edit them effectively this time. I'm still in the editing process, and hopefully I'll have them posted on the website, perhaps by the weekend. And now I plan to have them on the audio page with its own file, which would be the 2022 Deer Haven retreat. I don't particularly have any insights to report about my experience. I did change something. Usually we do loving kindness meditation as the last sitting of the retreat. But what I did on Friday night, which was the last night of the retreat, I provided a guided loving kindness meditation for folks and encouraged them to consider practicing that for the rest of the retreat. And then for the final sitting of the retreat, did a guided gratitude meditation. And I think that was very helpful. It was helpful for me, and I hope it was useful for those who were at the retreat. So that's my commentary, my report. You know, what we'll do now is open the floor for the people who were in the room, are in the room now, to talk about your retreat experience. After they've had a chance to talk, we can ask questions and see clarification if some of you who are joining us via Zoom have questions or comments. And then we'll go to the folks who were on the retreat who were with us through Zoom for your reports. For the reports, please speak loudly, because I'm not sure how well the information is transmitted from the room through the microphone in the computer or through the loudspeaker in the computer out into the room. Plus, it helps me with the editing of the Dharma talks from the retreat. So, I'm just going to designate a starting point and then we'll go from there. So let's start with Charlotte.
Okay. My practice during the retreat was not skillful. And so one sit, I got stable and did some Vipassana. But other than that, it was unskilled practice, not skillful practice. But I loved the retreat, being with the people I was with in the place I was. So that aspect of it, I very much enjoyed, and I'm glad I went. A little frustrating on the meditation side, but.
Now, you've been on many retreats.
Yes.
You say that it wasn't a very successful retreat. I think that I've had retreats that are not successful, but we can learn a lot from them about our practice, and it might be that you had more insights about the three characteristics, anicca, dukkha, and anatta, impermanence, distress and confusion, and non-self, than you realized. So can you spend a few minutes to kind of describe what your experience in terms of what you're saying was not a very successful retreat?
I'm not saying it's not a successful retreat, because for me, part of the retreat is being in the community, and that was as good as ever.
Well, you were expressing some dissatisfaction about the stream of consciousness during the retreat.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm inquiring about.
I found it difficult to maintain a meditative state of mind, like to smoothly move from sitting to walking and be mindful about the walking.
What was happening instead?
Just more mundane kinds of thoughts and enjoying the activities, the nature, the labyrinth, the dock on the, that goes out into the lake, rather than meditating.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I remember correctly, your experience on retreats, you've experienced a lot of samadhi.
Yes.
A lot of stability of attention and paucity, the tranquility.
Mm-hmm.
Something seemed to be, there certainly seemed to be some kind of condition that interfered. When you went into the retreat, had you been practicing prior to going on the retreat, sitting on a regular basis?
No. But I never had.
You never have.
So that was not different. But what's been different is that I have a number of responsibilities in my life that kind of ratcheted up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't like specifically thinking about them, but I was in a more into the mundane world.
So what I'm hearing you say is that your life style has some demands for your attention and action.
Mm-hmm.
And that you brought with you to the retreat.
Apparently.
Right. Just a reminder for everyone, including myself, what I've noticed with my practice is it's really important for me as a very experienced meditator to be diligent. I talked about adapi sati sampajanya during the retreat. Adapi is diligence. Sati is mindfulness, non-forgetfulness, not being absent-minded. And sampajanya is a clear comprehension, which involves investigation. So, for future reference, I think it would be useful for you to try to sit on a regular basis between retreats. I imagine you'll go on another retreat to be, try to be, what I do with my sitting is I sit, when I sit down, and I sit twice a day, I want to be really clear about my entry into the sitting. I have a little routine that I do, which is, and it's very simple, it's not very complicated. I want to be really sure that I'm clearly aware at the beginning of the in-breath and clearly aware of the beginning of the out-breath. And when I get up in the morning to meditate, it takes a while for my mind to kind of click into that. You know, I just kind of wanders off a little bit, but I just keep remembering, oh yeah, beginning of the in-breath. And when I remember the beginning of the in-breath, it makes it more likely I'll remember the beginning of the out-breath. And that takes care of the diligence and the mindfulness part. And it builds from that. And the clear comprehension manifests as the ability to notice how things are changing. Quality of attention, the object of attention, the ability to be present for the experience, to really investigate. Those are the kinds of things that would be useful. Because I think that's part of what you were contending with. So tuck that away for future reference.
Yeah, there's one thing I'd like to add, that probably the best experience I've had in the whole retreat was I was down at the lake and sitting out on the dock, and I heard the dog that lives next door that comes to the camp a lot. And I turned and looked, and the dog was chasing a young bear along the shoreline. And it was just, the bear was so beautiful. The way the skin and hair were kind of flowing as it was running. And it was my assumption that they were pretty much having fun.
Yeah, they knew each other.
Yeah, that dog didn't want to kill that bear.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing the bear was scared of, it ran along the shoreline until it got to where it was going to have to go out into people territory. And then it went crashing into the woods to get away. So it didn't go out in the clear where the people are.
Yeah. So you brought some joy to that encounter with you. It wasn't a distraction. It wasn't a disturbance. But there was a quality of attention that was not terribly hindered. Because what keeps us from joy, which is one of the awakening factors, that was the seven awakening factors is one of the topics for exploration, the Dharma talks. The hindrances get in the way of joy. Joy is sort of hardwired into our bodies and our minds. And when we're not, the mind is not burdened with the hindrances, yeah, things are more vivid. Experience is more vivid. Life is richer, more enjoyable. So you had that experience, and that's a blessing.
Absolutely.
Questions or comments before we go to the next person?
I can like to say something. Joy, I noticed something about you that I thought was really interesting that you might be interested to know. I just happened to note. Now, your total countenance had changed. Your complexion had gotten glowing, if I could just say that. I noticed it. I didn't intend to be noticing. Look at somebody and you see.
Well, that's what happens in the retreat. Things are more vivid.
Right, and I'm telling you, your whole countenance was like glowing is all I could say. So
it was after I saw that bear.
I don't know. I mean, but it was really what I just wanted you to know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was toward the end of the retreat.
Yeah.
Joy is with me a lot.
Mm-hmm. Good. Other questions or comments? All right, John?
Hi, my name is John Ciccone. I've been on probably a dozen retreats up at Deer Haven, and I too had a bear experience. When I first drove in, and I was so proud of myself for getting there kind of early on Saturday, like 3 or 4, maybe not for other people, but for me it was a victory. And I was going in, and I took a wrong road, went through a bunch of houses, and then I got back to the right sandy road and to go into the entrance of Deer Haven. And there's probably a mile of sandy road. Man, I looked up, and there was this bear.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. My eyes. I've been there all those times. I've never seen a bear. And I'm in the car, and I'm seeing this. It was probably 250 pounds.
Right.
And it was about 30 to 40 yards in front of me. And it was lumbering to the, right in the middle of the road. And stopped. And it just looked me square in the eye. I felt like Daniel Boone. First off, it was so fascinating. It was like I was in Never Never Land, like a cartoon. Then it scared the heck out of me. So I rolled the windows up. And I thought, this guy could tear me apart and have me for lunch. And so that was it. We just stared at each other. It was like for a minute or two. And it was just bizarre. It totally changed my attitude, got me into the retreat mode in a blink. And I don't know.
So, John, what about your experiences while you were actually meditating when your retreat started?
Well, it was a very good retreat, except I was extremely tired. I slept like a log. I love the Ocala forest, and when I go on walks, it's very relaxing. But I slept. I just was like, my gosh, it was weird. I was sleeping like a log, and I was only sleeping about 6 hours. And I'm a consistent sitter. I've been sitting for, I didn't want to tell you how many years, over 30 years. You know what I mean? And I sit every day. So when I sat, it was like I said, it was amplified. It reminded me, it was just amplified. I only know that this bright face, I only know the community with 18 of us there was nice, that it amplified. And it was, that was a great feeling. You know what I mean? You could really feel it when you sat in the room with people, and that was refreshing. And I just had some great sits, and I had long periods of I call it no think. That's the way I like to call it, but some people call it John. I don't know which one to call it, but it paralleled when I was a kid. I used to have dreams like that and wake up screaming, but it was what I go meditate for, which is the stillness of the mind. And a lot of times I get a color. And it was just a very vivid retreat, you know what I'm saying? And it was just, all of a sudden, of course, now, maybe that sleeping had something to do with my staying up watching Cowboys till 2 o'clock in the morning and sleeping till 11, and then figuring out what job I was going to, you know, when I go to my job. So it was a great retreat in terms of just more amplification, more vividness that I really noticed. And I loved the camaraderie. I loved just sitting, and I loved the people. So it was a great retreat for that respect.
Thank you. Questions or comments for John? David, this was your very first retreat, so
I tell you,
I'm eager to hear your report, sir.
Well, I had a tough time sleeping, and I went 2 nights without no sleep, and it was brutal to try to maintain and for 45 minutes sitting, you know, 5 times in a day. But I hang in there. I hung in there. I did what you said. You said just don't make it complicated. Just do the basics. You know, your breath. Just focus on your breath. So I just did that. I just didn't try to think it through too hard. Just do the breath and do that. And
I don't sleep very much on retreats. Maybe a couple of hours. It's mostly what's called REM sleep, which is dreaming. So it's lucid dreaming a lot on retreats. So
yeah.
you just like you just said, you just stay with the basics and and see what will happen.
Yeah. It was great. It was amazing. There were times that it just seemed like you know, everything just became crystal clear. It was incredible. You know, I felt like there was a, we all kind of were helping each other somehow, indirectly, just by working together to do the one thing. And there were times when it just seemed so crystal clear, just the energy in my mind. but it's amplified my practice at home, this retreat experience, and this taught me a lot about myself. And during the retreat, it's all positive, but it's embarrassing to myself to see the aspects of myself that were revealed to me, you know, just egotism mostly, and that I didn't like, but I, you know, had to work with it, sit with it. But
that's what we're there to discover, how the ego creates distress and confusion. Somebody who's been in the Sangha for a long time, after returning from her first retreat, said she was disappointed and frustrated because, you know, she just kept getting distracted and she kept having all these problems, and I congratulated her. I said, now you understand, you know, what we have to contend with on a daily basis with the mind. So the idea is that you have to be aware of that and learn how to be patient and develop the kinds of skills that would be useful in settling the mind. So did you notice any change in your the way your mind was receiving the experience over the course of those several days?
Yes. I found it easier to allow it to just, you helped me out, well, I mean, a lot, I mean, which goes without saying, I mean, this just profoundly helped me out in how you've refined this process. But I'm trying to say that you'd said, you know, you're in the hull of the boat. That was a great analogy. I kind of tried to tap into that. And I was able to get to a point where I would see the impermanence of the thought. You know, they would come and they would go. Something would disturb me. My mind would want to wrestle with it, to dismantle it, take it apart, fix it, you know. But I was able to just let those things go. I was able to not allow those things to lock me down and over time. And that was an amazing experience. That's something I have a really active mind. I'm always wanting to analyze, build things, construct, and it can be good in some places and annoying when it won't stop. And that was great to be able to just sit and just let everything, just let it happen. Just let it happen without being disturbed by it. That was a pretty amazing place to get to, but it was extremely tough and difficult to get there. Just to stay seated and do the task. But I stuck with it, you know. It was an amazing, awesome experience.
So I want to remind you of something I said more than once on the retreat. The meditation practice, mindfulness of breathing, is not difficult. The hindrances are difficult.
Yes.
We tend to, in our confusion, think that meditation is hard because we keep being distracted. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that the distractions are what are hard. And when you become more clearly aware of that and you realize the relief that comes from being present with the breath and the body, then things open up. And just for those, you know, you mentioned the hull of the boat. It's a simile that I use often. And for those who have not heard the simile before, it's very useful. Imagine that your self-experience is like the hull of a boat in the stream of a river. And mindfulness of breathing is like an anchor. And your ability to bring your attention to the breath is like the rope that attaches to the anchor, and the anchor and the rope go right off the bow of the boat, and the anchor is embedded in the base of the stream. Mm-hmm. And so experience flows downstream and bumps into consciousness. As long as you just notice it's bumping and you don't grab it, you're just aware, this is what the mind does. You know, thinking is a phenomena of nature. It's not a self. And you notice that, and it comes and it bumps and goes downstream until you grab it, which is craving and clinging. At that point, it gets tough, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So that's what you were encountering.
Okay.
So you had some glimpses of impermanence and non-self,
yes.
and relief from dukkha,
mm-hmm.
as a result of your practice during the retreat.
Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can't think of anything else to report. It's just I wish we could have met a little sooner, but the hurricane messed us up, and I understand that, of course.
Yeah.
But we couldn't help that. But
so, what stayed with you after retreat?
Being more easier on myself. I'm real hard on myself. I mean, just bam, it's just the way I was raised. My dad was hardcore. You know, grind it out, hammer it out, whatever. You know, get it done. And that doesn't work with this. You know, that does not work. So I guess I'm just trying to take it easy. You know, if I find that I'm distracted, I don't get like upset so fast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right, just take it easy, man, you're fine. Come back to the breath and just keep, be calm, and not just jerk it, my mind back to the breath and try to breathe, but, you know, no, just take it easy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's helping me in that way. And then I'm starting to meditate twice a day now instead of once a day like I was before, so I've consistently now, except for a couple of days, I couldn't sleep very well. So, I was amazed at how fast the terrorists got back into the cockpit, though. In terms, yeah, it's just a figure of speech, of course, but
a very powerful one.
I mean, I'm like, man, you know, you finally reach this state of stable mental state. And then, you know, you get back to the house and bam, man.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody jumps back into the cockpit and boom, we're on. It's on.
So let me make a few comments about that, David. First of all, I admire and respect your dedication to this. I mean, you since I met you, which is not too long ago, you are really, you remind me of myself when I first started to meditate.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I was driven and hard on myself, perfectionistic and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's important to understand part of what comes with that kind of conditioning is shame. You know, it's really easy to become ashamed of your imperfection. Well, the reality is, the more we can understand skillfully the nature of craving and clinging and how it, you know, the experience of distress and confusion that we call dukkha, humiliation turns into humility. Humiliation is the shame, you know, the terrorist in the cockpit. Humility is recognizing this is conditioning. This is not who I am. And then you can change it. It's one of the things the Buddha said after his awakening. If I thought that people couldn't change, I would not even begin to try to describe liberation. But I know it works. So here it is. Now, that's been validated by contemporary research about what's called neuroplasticity. You know, that terrorist in the cockpit is neural pathways that have been strongly conditioned and become your ego, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Well, you can change that. But what happens in the changing is, first of all, you have to realize the terror, right? You have to recognize the terrorist conditioning and then be able to just simply have some humility and say, okay, it happened again, back to the breath, back to the body, back to the practice. And what you're doing then is you're feeding different neural pathways that are more wholesome, that are liberating the mind from distress and confusion.
So, great. That makes sense.
And I'm glad you're sitting twice a day.
Yeah.
I hope that you'll be able to keep it up.
I'm going to. I intend to. In the rare circumstances where I'll never not sit once a day, but two times a day is where I'm at now.
And when if you feel like you're tired, lay down and keep watching your breathing.
Okay.
Don't give up on that.
All right.
There have been times when I was really sleep deprived for one reason or another.
Yeah.
And I realized sitting up is not going to work. I just laid there. I drank a cup of caffeinated tea, which is what I do every morning, and I laid back down. And I watched myself breathe and watched myself dream and watched myself breathe and watched myself dream.
Being mindful.
Being mindful
right,
the whole
right.
time.
Okay.
Because that's the practice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Thank you. I'll do that.
Mm-hmm. Questions or comments for David before we go to the folks who are at Zoom?
I just want to say that.
Wait, Joy and then Charlotte.
How was your re-entry to the world? How did that feel?
Great. Really good. Just a lot of joy and a lot of freedom.
And how was it speaking to the first person you met in the real world?
I can't remember exactly.
That's okay.
No.
Just curious because that was interesting.
Yeah, good though. Joy, just that I had to work through it and just felt the. It's hard to describe, really. Just a lot of positive attitude about it. A lot of positive.
Yeah.
That I'm on the right track. Stay with it, you know, that type of thing.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I just want to say that seated across from you, I probably observed you more than I did others.
Sure.
And really saw a lot of dedication.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yep.
I will second that. This is Xanthi.
Xanthi.
Xanthi. Which one? Which
Xanthi. One? Xanthi was sitting to the left of
the
Charlotte.
Blackboard.
Oh, right near the blackboard. Okay, yeah.
Right next to the blackboard.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Xanthi.
Okay, so let's go to Xanthi.
I had a wonderful retreat, and it was so nice to have a wonderful retreat.
You've been on a lot of retreats, a lot.
Yeah, I've done a lot of retreat in my life, and you know, a lot of times there's been a lot of struggle during retreat, and this one, it just seems like there was less struggle. Things were smoother. I think there was a lot less doubt. I think there was just more trust in my experience, in myself. Everything felt very nourishing. I think a few people said how supportive the group felt, and I will just reiterate that. I felt so supported by just being in a room with people who are just breathing, you know? yeah, so not sure what else to say, but it was great.
So were there any particular insights, revelations that you may have had that now I'm asking you the question that come to mind?
I think the insight had to do with just having less doubt. Something... something about trust in the path. I don't know how to turn that into an insight, but there was just more realization about the value of the absence of doubt and how doubt creeps in, or how I can kind of just keep trusting and just keep open.
So doubt shows up in terms of either doubt about the wisdom itself, or doubt about your capability.
My own capacity.
Right.
On the path. So, and I think that had a lot. There was a switch there, I think, that I have great capacity for this practice, you know? If I trust myself, and there was also a lot of, and as I spoke to you, framing things in a different way that works much better for me.
Can you give an example? I mean, you don't have to get into terrible detail, but just, we're talking about a process here. And if you could think of an experience that you had while meditating, that would be an example of that.
Well, I think... You know, I spoke with you a little bit about this. You know, there's the practice of mindfulness of the breath, and that's one of the practices I was doing. But I was also doing a practice that I would describe as receiving myself or receiving my experience. So just being still and letting my awareness experience what is happening in a more receptive and nourishing way. So that's less aversion in that case. You know, that just helped me not to get into this, you know, I have to focus or I have to do this. It was just more freedom from that aversion of, or greed of wanting it to be a certain way, or... Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it also sounds sort of like some of that perfectionism that we're all confronted with.
Sure. Yes. There was quite a lot less of that. You know, less judgment and less being hard on myself or, you know.
So more compassion, more self-compassion.
Yeah, compassion and gentleness.
Turning humiliation into humility.
Yeah, that.
Okay. So. Thank you. Questions or comments for Xanthi about her practice experience? Well, let me go back to you, Xanthi. I know right after, you participated in an art festival.
Yes.
And I had said something to you before you left about culture shock.
Yeah.
And Paula and I actually visited you, and so did Charlotte, and I think Mitch visited you. And
Mitch came, and yeah. Charlotte, and Jan. Right. Jan. Yeah.
Yeah. So what was that like for you to go into, you know, big crowds and lots of... I used to do art festivals, so I get what it's like to be there. And, you know, you have to be sensitive enough to be creative, and then you have to sit there and listen to people make all kinds of inane comments about your product, your art.
Yeah.
So what was that like for you? Were you going right from a retreat into that kind of environment?
Yeah, well, obviously there was a lot of stimulation, but I felt calm enough that I could take it, so to speak, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was just pretty light with it, you know? Whatever was going on, it was good. It worked out well for me.
And was
I
that
do it all the time.
Was that noticeably different than prior art festivals that you've been in?
I think there was a lot less feeling of stress for this, mm-hmm. which was good. You know, of course, I had my moments, but. Another thing that I should mention, and this often happens to me with retreats, is there was such a release of contraction in my body. My body felt so much better. Usually when I do these art festivals, it's really hard on my body to do all the lifting and moving and setting up and, you know, carrying up and down stairs. And usually I'm pretty sore. And this time I wasn't. My body was just fine. It was great.
Congratulations.
Yeah, so that was really nice, too.
Okay. So questions or comments for Zanti before we go to the next person? All right. Steve, this was your first retreat, if I remember correctly. Is that accurate?
Yeah, also first retreet, and boy, what an initiation the first retreat is. If I don't come through, well, I'll have to shut off the video. I mean, up in New Jersey.
You sound fine. You sound fine. It's very clear.
Okay. Yeah, to go from 45 minutes a day of meditation into however many sessions and hours that we were doing, wow, the ego sure doesn't like that at all. And, you know, it was a problem. I mean, I came into the retreat agitated with a family issue, and so, you know, just getting hijacked by the discursive thought process frequently for the first few days. And, you know, the subtle dullness that would just creep into it, just frustrating to be trying to meditate so many times in a day and just feeling frustrated with it. Now, to be fair, over the next few days, to see that begin to dissipate and to become quieter and to reach a point where the 45-minute sessions have pretty good awareness, and actually, I would say on the fourth day, start to have some moments of really amazing vividness, where, you know, you're like observing something that is just has so much detail to it, you know, that you notice it as being much more granular than, you know, you have and just, you know, your general experience. So it was nice to reach that point, even if it was just for a few moments during the retreat. You know, obviously, you know, things are changing, and it was just an experience that I'd not had before, and just really grateful for that opportunity. Now, over the time period, I was becoming more, not looser maybe, but, you know, a little bit more difficult at night. You said also that, you know, dreams would come in and become, you know, really quite vivid, and I was experiencing that as well, I think, the last couple nights. And I did leave the retreat, to be fair, left it a day early, which, you know, my father was really pretty grateful for. But, you know, on the drive down to Boca, just realizing also that, you know, my stability of the attention was really quite good. I was able to be mindful during that, a lot of that drive, and, you know, noticed that, you know, the intention to connect with the mile marker over 20 miles of that drive. So I noticed that as well. Now, of course, you know, how do you relate to coming back into the busy world? Well, you know, I came right down into just, you know, unhappy wife who just is just never really appreciative of the practice at all. In fact, you know, I'm the alien. And, okay, well, yes, that's true. Okay.
You're witnessing suffering.
Hey, all around, right?
Yep. So
I'll take being the alien. Why not?
You're not the alien. It's all conditioning. It's impersonal. And when I say that, I'm not trying to make it trite or disrespectful of life. It's a key part of the process of awakening, is to realize that the sense of self is just simply a reenactment of old patterns of thinking and feeling. And we can see that as processes that are natural for the brain, function, but relate to them differently. That's what brings the liberation and the relief. You know, you said something about subtle dullness. It's important to be able to see it for what it is, because that's the default mode of how we move through life. Is we're not really attentive. We're distressed and confused, and we kind of stumble through that. But like you said, about the fourth day into a retreat, you know, things start to shift. There's more alertness, there's more clarity, there's less reactivity, and, you know, it's a gift. It's one of the reasons I keep doing retreats over and over again, is enjoying that transition. And when I come out of the retreat, it's reassuring to know that you know, some of that still is with me. And it stayed with me over the decades that I've been doing this. And also grateful that I can share it with others and see others benefit as well. And I thought it was really interesting. You were using mile markers as reminders to stay mindful. It's very useful to find little things you can do. One of the things that helped me to stay mindful is noticing whether I'm stepping on a cracking the sidewalk or not when I'm walking. You know, as trite and childish as that is, I notice where my foot lands. Is it on a sidewalk, or is it on the imposed cracks across, or a crack that's come about over time? To just be aware of that kind of keeps the mind alert. I also use eye blinks to do the same thing.
Yeah, noticing, you know, something in, you know, your real experience instead of just, you know, hijacked by, you know, some thought. Mm-hmm. You know, the walking meditation that you did with the uneven ground, I thought that was also just, you know, that was one of these moments of just, you know, a vivid granularity to just notice how so many muscles are, you know, in tension and releasing and just adjusting in order to handle the forces of that shift of balance. How the body actually causes balance, that it's not just turning on a switch in your balance, but, you know, just this symphony of movement.
Yeah, I do that. It's called the Nature of the Mind walk. It's a guided meditation. For those of you who haven't experienced it, there's a slope that goes down from the meditation hall down to the woods, and we walk down that, and of course the ground's a little bit uneven, and, you know, it's just enough to experience what Steve is talking about, and notice how the mind moves from one focal point to another. That's something I typically include into the retreat the fifth or sixth day in the morning. So, yeah, that's a good one. And that's kind of what I was talking about when I'm walking around my neighborhood, is to notice, where does my attention go? How does that happen? And then come back to being grounded in the pace of walking or the in-breath and out-breath that's going on. So, questions or comments for Steve before we end it, the talk for the evening? John?
I just wanted to say one thing that everybody said in a different way, but what I was noticing something is that the end of the in-breath and the beginning of the out-breath, you know, that's kind of the cadence that you get into to get to this quietness, to get to this vividness. For me, I'm noticing that I carry the breath a lot of times with me during the day, and I'm suddenly realizing that I'm catching hell from myself or whatever the situation is, a traffic situation, but that I'm saying, I'm on the in-breath or I'm on the out-breath, whereas that's the body, that's mindfulness calming me down. And I just realized that tool has been so vivid and it's so much a part of me that I didn't describe it very clearly, but that cadence of in-breath, pause, out-breath, that cadence, as you watch it, you quiet down. It reminds me of the, just hearing people talk, of the Marine Corps. They would teach you to march for 12 weeks at Parris Island. They don't do it 12 weeks anymore. It's only 9. But when you hear 90 boots hitting the ground, you know, it's quite amazing. But when you hear it, quiet your thoughts down and you don't hurt yourself with them, like Zandi was, you know, the inconfidence thing, you can really hurt yourself with your thoughts, but when that cadence calms you down and you've got this tool to keep going back to, it just stunned me right now how it helps me in situations I didn't think about it. You know what I mean? Right now when I'm visualizing that breath, I'm calming. You know, when I'm saying, okay, it's in-breath, but I'm awake, I'm actually mindful. I'm actually, so that's cool. I appreciate that.
That is cool.
Insight.
Yes. Yes. It's a gift that we have, so we just have to remember to use it. So,
One more thing.
Yes, Joy.
I just remembered, and this, it comes to me over and over, but at one of the retreats, what you said to me was, be gentle with yourself. No one ever told me to be gentle with myself. No one ever told me anything like that. And to me, it was just mind-blowing, because it was so simple and so profound.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's so true. We've all had to endure it, going through school, being graded and compared to our peers. You know, not to mention what might be happening at home. It creates a lot of stress. Want to remind people that there's another important retreat coming up, February 3rd through the 10th, at a local retreat center, San Pedro Center. We're producing it, and the teacher is Shyla Catherine, and she's very well respected internationally as a teacher, author of 3 books, and very grateful to have her here. What's been surprising to me is that here we are almost 3 months away from the retreat, and it's almost full. So if there's anyone who hears this, who think you might want to go on a really good one-week retreat that's local, better sign up soon. I know that there are 2 people who are in the Zoom meeting who have signed up. I know I'm going to be there. So just a reminder. It's our custom at the end of each sitting to sit for a moment in silence, or at the end of each Dharma talk to sit in silence for a few moments. So let's do that. Thank you for your practice. I wish you well.